Welcome to ACB Radio's Main Menu Live. Opinions expressed during the show do not reflect the views of ACB Radio or the American Council of the Blind, its members, employees, or board of directors. If you would like to participate in the live show at 2 hours Universal on Wednesdays, please call toll-free 866-400-5333. That's 866-400-5333.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Main Menu Live this week. This week, we bring to you Gordon Smith live. But before we do that, let's bring on our co-host tonight, Daryl Shandro. Hello, Daryl.
Good.
Hi there.
Good evening, everyone.
Hi there. And hello, Gordon. How you doing tonight?
I'm fine, thanks. It's a little late, so I hope you can hear me okay.
Oh, we can hear you. We can hear you just great. And before we actually get into all things Mac and virtualization and all things Gordon, we wanted to bring on a special guest tonight to talk about an urgent matter concerning the National Library Service. So I'm going to, Daryl and Gordon, I'm going to put you guys on mute for a minute, and we're going to talk to Don just for a minute. Hello, Don. How's it going, bud?
Fine, Jeff. How's everything?
Oh, everything is fantastic. Absolutely fantastic.
Great.
So what's going on, man? What's going on with this NLS issue?
Well, this is kind of an interesting issue. I think it's something that should be of concern to any blind person, anyone who has enjoyed and does enjoy the Talking Book program, which we all know the NLS has done such a fabulous job of delivering.
Absolutely.
The past 70-some-odd years. Let me start out by saying I am not affiliated with any group. I'm not representing anyone. I'm calling strictly as a blind consumer who's very, very concerned about some issues regarding the NLS appropriations. Now, for those of you who may not really follow that, very briefly, every year Congress provides appropriations for various federal agencies. For example, I work for the Department of Education, and every year the Appropriations Committee and the House and the Senate get together and decide how much money we're going to be getting as a federal agency. Well, the same thing happens with the National Library Service, which is in the legislative branch of the government. I'm in the executive branch, but they're in the legislative branch. Now, the other day I saw a fact sheet and a letter issued by Mark Maurer of the NFB concerning an issue regarding the congressional appropriations for the coming few years at NLS. And as I understand things, and again, let me stress, I am not an expert on congressional matters, but I want to share what I know and hope that those of you who want to follow through and are interested, you know, maybe can contact Melanie in the national office and get some additional information on how we can best approach this. As I understand things, and this is my understanding, as I say, I just want to make it clear. All of you know the NLS is moving toward a digital talking book program. I think they built their last cassette machine sometime this year, and they have done just such a fantastic job of research and development over the past 10 years, and they're supposed to go live with their digital talking books in 2008. This involves a new player. It involves special cartridges that will hold upwards of 24 hours of material on one cartridge. It's just fantastic, and eventually will replace cassette books, you know, which are in their present cassette format, are going to move more and more into this digital format. In order to make this happen, according to this fact sheet from NFB, they have requested an additional $19 million for the next 3 years for their appropriations to fund the manufacture of machines and the software and the cartridge development, all the things they have to do to move from the cassette system into this digital system. Now, everything would be fine, but as I have heard, the Government Accountability Office, which kind of oversees different agencies, did an audit of NLS and has criticized them for what they have been doing in the audio arena. And I did not read the report, but the NFB fact sheet states that the GAO report is criticizing NLS for not using iPod-type or CD-type audio technology. Now, obviously, anyone who knows anything about blindness knows that NLS could never issue inaccessible or very delicate devices such as iPods or CDs, which could easily, you know, be damaged and not hold up. NLS has done a lot of research to come up with a technology that they've settled on, and they did look at CD technology and did abandon it as just not workable for a lot of the patrons that they serve. At any rate, the bottom line is that because the GAO report criticizes NLS and their choice of their new digital format, there's some question about the appropriateness of funding this new digital program on the Hill. And what the fact sheet urges people to do, and what I'm suggesting you all think about doing, and maybe, as I said, we can get, you know, Melanie involved in this too, to find out what, how, you know, the take is on from the national office on this, but contacting your representatives and your senators and members of the Appropriations Committee and telling them that you wholeheartedly support the NLS program. We need this program. We need the new digital format. Cassettes are being dropped in the whole marketplace, not just at NLS, eventually, yeah, but in the whole marketplace. And they really need to know that this is a program that must be funded and that the GAO report, whether it's well-meaning or deliberately misleading, who knows, but is full of misinformation about the kinds of technology blind people can use. So that's as much as I know.
Okay. So basically you want us to contact our senators and representatives and let them know our concerns and we'll try to dig up more information and get more information out to the community on this.
The only thing I would finish by saying is please do not call NLS. As federal employees, they are not allowed to discuss this.
Good point.
And it really puts them on the spot to even get questions about it.
Oof.
Don't call the regionals. Get in touch with your representatives and senators and let them know that it's the Subcommittee on the Appropriations for the Legislative Branch that's part of the Appropriations Committee, and that you really do support the Talking Book program and you want to see it move into the digital age.
Okay. Well, thank you, Don, for coming on, and we'll have you on Main Menu with Randy here in a couple weeks.
Terrific. Thank you all so much for listening.
Okay, thanks.
Bye-bye.
All right. We'll next hear from Daryl and Gordon, as well as your phone calls, right after this.
This week, I'd like to continue my theme of departing from software reviews by reviewing a website. Now, you may think that's really going far afield, but in reality it isn't, because the website in question is BibleGateway.com. Blind people want to study the Bible independently, and this is a great resource. You can look up Bible passages, you can read footnotes and commentaries, and you can listen to the Bible in audio. It's all free. I'll give it a 5 rating. And again, that's www.BibleGateway.com. Check out the website and come visit us at accesswatch.info. Also, check out our new blog at accesswatch.wordpress.com. Have a great week.
You're listening to Main Menu Live, airing at 2 hours Universal on Wednesday. To participate in the show, please call toll-free 866-400-5333. That's 866-400-5333.
That's right, and the phone lines are open. Let's welcome back Daryl and Gordon. Hi, gentlemen. How's it going tonight?
Hi, it's going good.
Ah, oh, great. All right. Well, now we had a great opportunity to hear your presentation in the first hour, Gordon, and we really want to thank you for putting that together. That was fantastic. We really enjoyed that. And before we get started into all things Mac, why don't you give the Main Menu Live listeners a little bit of information on your background and kind of like, you know, what your history is in reference to access technology and that type of thing.
Okay, well, I've worked for quite a few years in the Windows market, been testing various different pieces of software. I do a lot of work with GW Micro, the vendors of Windows, of course. I migrated to the Mac as well because I feel it's quite important to try and stay in touch with, you know, as many angles of accessibility as possible. And I do a lot of technical support as well as provide internet services for blind and other people. And as part of that, I think it's important to embrace Mac users as well. So in 2005, I decided to take the tentative step and buy my first Macintosh. And it was at that point that I realized that, hang on a sec, all these things that I've been told, oh, don't buy a Mac, don't buy a Mac, don't do this, don't do that. I think basically a lot of that was, a lot of the comments that go around about the Mac are, it seems to me, based on fear or fear of the unknown. Because when I first started using the Mac, I found that a lot of this stuff is just not true. So, you know, I sort of migrated from there. Now I use both operating systems, and I'm very comfortable with either. So
that's great.
That's sort of how I got started.
Okay. Yeah, we'll get into it. You mentioned that there's a lot of myths about the Mac, and I'd like to maybe touch on those here tonight as well. But I wanted to focus a little bit on the actual presentation that you did, and I had a couple of questions, and I think we have one question from a listener already. And, in fact, why don't we do that one now? Daryl, are you there?
Yes. Pat had a question, sort of kind of going in the other direction, though. Gordon, are you aware whether these VMware products can be run on the PC side and whether you could run Mac OS or Linux or another operating system going the other direction?
That's a very good question. There are emulators around. As far as I'm aware, there is no support at the moment for running Tiger on a PC under virtualization. I haven't actually tried the latest version of VMware Workstation, which is the most common PC sort of application. As far as I'm aware, as I said, at the moment there's no way to run Tiger on a PC without a lot of jiggery-pokery fiddling about, and it's possible to run it in native mode if you're prepared to go in and start butchering binary files and so on. I'm not going to go into all the ins and outs of that because I'd be here forever, but it's doable in native mode, but as far as I'm aware, not under virtualization, no.
Now, what about Vista on the Mac? Do you know if that, I heard rumor that it's not working, and then I heard rumors that it is working, and have you had any experience on trying to put Vista on a Mac?
Yeah, since I did that presentation, I have actually played with Vista on the Mac in native mode on Bootcamp and under virtualization. And yes, Vista works fine.
Oh, wow.
Wow.
And you can install it independently just like you did XP.
Yes, you can, yes.
That's amazing.
Yeah, now see, that's, you know, when I listened to your presentation, I thought, okay, because, you know, I mean, I'm really not... Well, I wasn't. I may be now. I've been sort of skeptical about and you know about the Mac, and we'll get into that in just a couple of minutes. But when I saw you actually do the install and having it done independently, that was just unbelievable. I did have one question about that. It seemed as though that install took about 7 minutes.
That was because I obviously didn't, you know, leave the thing running because I would have been well over the
okay,
the
okay, so I was just checking because, wow, if it was doing some magic behind the scenes there to get that installed to be done in 7 minutes, man, that's worth doing, that's worth buying a Mac just for that.
Was that really an accessible installation, though, Gordon? I mean, I heard silence, but it sounded like it was installing. Did you need sighted assistance, or was that all accessible?
It's all completely accessible. What it does is, once I start the virtual machine up, and it realizes that, hang on, there's no operating system installed in the virtual hard disk, it says, okay, I'll go and look for another virtual device, find the CD. It finds the Windows CD and says, right, okay, I install Windows from here. So it creates a script, what they call a block install, and boots from the CD and then goes away and does it.
Wow, so it bypasses all of the, you know, setting your time settings and all of that stuff.
You can do that later once Windows is running.
Yeah, you can go in and set all those settings yourself. Sure, yeah.
Yeah.
Very interesting. The number tonight is 866-400-5333, 866-400-JEFF. If you'd like to call in and ask Gordon any questions that you may have. All right, well, let's go ahead and dive into some of these myths. And we'll let you kind of kick off that, but we do have a couple of questions of our own concerning myths or Apple involvement, that type of a thing. So want to kick it off there, Gordon?
Sure. VoiceOver is not perfect. I think that's the first thing to stress from the outset. But there are a lot of rumors going around that you can't edit your Office documents, you can't use your spreadsheets and so on and so forth on the Mac. That's simply not true. MacOS comes pre-configured and built in with an editor which is more than capable of handling Microsoft Word documents, and there are applications now, some of which are now accessible, which will handle spreadsheets and all your sort of usual kind of stuff, you know. So it's just a case of getting used to a different environment. Apple's screen reading technology isn't not the same as Windows. That was just Mail. It's not the same as Windows, but you know, once you get used to it, you find you become very, very comfortable with it.
What about now? You said that Word and Excel documents. Is that using native? Obviously not for the Excel piece, but what about the Word pieces? That's using just native Apple technology to edit Word documents?
I'm sorry, can you repeat that?
Yeah, the tools that you're using to edit Microsoft Word documents, is that built into the Mac? In other words,
yes, it is. Okay. Yeah, okay. It's all pre-installed when you install the operating system, which incidentally you can also do completely accessible.
Yes, yeah, we've heard about that. Okay, and so that kind of alleviates one concern, because that obviously has been a big concern within corporate environments. That, you know, are you going to be able to access Word documents? Are you going to be able to exchange them with, you know, people who are using Microsoft Office on the PC, for example? So that really is something that should not be of concern then.
I would say not. No, you can access all of your documents, you know, Microsoft Word documents, files. The only thing that you may have trouble with is if people start using the new formats which came into being with Office 2007 and Vista. But I'm sure there are editors emerging in the Apple Mac marketplace which will actually handle those as well.
Oh, I'm sure. I mean, you know, I'm sure Microsoft will even come out with converters or something for the Mac. Absolutely.
I'm sure that's true, yes.
Yeah. And then what about connectivity to corporate networks? This isn't really necessarily an accessibility question, but more of just a networking and connectivity issue. Are you able to successfully connect to, say, like a Windows domain and things like that?
Yes, you can. SMB technology, which is what Windows chooses, is fully supported.
Okay. All right, good. Daryl, do you have any questions?
Well, I was kind of wanting to stick back on the business productivity side for just a bit longer.
Sure.
There. Okay, so say I run a Mac, and my boss sends me a Word document, or even I need to go the other direction. I need to create a Word document, and you know, I use a lot of bulleted, numbered lists, and I use tables and different things, and then you know, I want to spell check the document and save it and email it as an attachment. Do you think that one would have any issue with that simple process?
In terms of tables and so on, the inbuilt editor, which comes with macOS, which is called Text Edit, will handle rudimentary tables. If you really want to start getting more complicated, there are editors such as Nicest Writer Express, which is a commercial application, which will handle anything that Microsoft Office, Microsoft Word will do. Emailing, attachments, yes, that's absolutely no problem. You can do that just by opening your mail client, pressing a key, selecting the file that you want, click, 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 and away it goes.
And what about spell check?
Spell check, yes. Tiger supports dictionaries by default for quite a number of languages. All you do is quite literally press command and semicolon. Command being the equivalent to the Windows Alt key.
Right.
And the semicolon key, and that pops a spell check window.
Okay.
Wow.
Yeah, very good. And then now I'm sure, of course, with the Excel application, it's probably not obviously as feature rich as, say, Office, but at least you can get, you know, formulas and data into your spreadsheets, and you can examine them and all that, right?
Well, again, with Excel, as in the Microsoft environment,
right.
You probably need a commercial spreadsheet application, but they do exist.
Okay. And are they written to the specifications that are required for VoiceOver to function within that environment?
They are fully Microsoft compatible, most of them, yes. Another thing I would also point out is the actual pricing of software in the Macintosh environment. Let me just give you one example. SoundForge 9, as you probably know, was recently released for Windows.
Yes.
The retail price for SoundForge 9 is, if I remember rightly, $249.
Yeah.
There is a reciprocal application on the Mac called Sound Studio, which is what I used to record that demo, and that retails for $79.
Wow.
And is that how accessible is that with VoiceOver?
Well, as you heard, I just clicked on it and moved around. Editing the files is a little difficult with that particular application. I use that as a recorder because I find it the most responsive. There is another one which has fully accessible edit facilities called Audio Hijack, and that one is a very, very good editor. So, yeah, I mean, editing of audio files is perfectly possible.
Yeah, I've heard about Audio Hijack. That's cool.
Now, is Audacity available on the Mac? I think it is.
Audacity is available, yes, but as far as I'm aware, the last time I tried it, it didn't seem particularly voiceover friendly. It may have changed, but that was a while ago.
Yeah, interesting. Okay. The number is 866-400-5333, 866-400-JEFF. I wanted to go back to this whole issue of virtualization for a couple of minutes, and I noticed that you were running WindowEyes in the XP virtualization window that you were using, and I'm just wondering,
yeah.
Have you tried using JAWS for Windows on in putting that on a Mac?
I knew that question was going to come up somehow. Yes, I have actually tried JAWS for Windows, and it does work. Under certain configurations, there are some keyboard issues because Freedom use their own keyboard drivers, but there are workarounds for them. I just didn't want to sort of get too technical because, you know, this was just meant to be a demo to show you the
right
way it works.
Yeah. No, that's fine. I was just wondering if it worked or if it didn't work. You know, I wasn't even sure if... Because I know they had a keyboard driver, and I didn't know if that was going to, you know, preclude it from even functioning or how, you know, due to the Macintosh environment.
There is a little utility that you can use for Windows, which will work actually on any sort of implementation of Windows, called Sharp Keys. And what that lets you do is remap any of the keys on your keyboard to a different function. And a lot of Mac users use that. For instance, on the Mac, the Alt key and the Windows key are inverted, and a lot of Windows users use sharp keys to swap them back so that they are, once they go to Windows, they're in the right places. They're sort of where, you know, you would expect to find them.
Okay.
So, you know, you can actually get around a lot of the JAWS issues by using sharp keys, remapping the keys to make them sort of compatible with the JAWS keyboard drivers, and then away you go.
Like the Windows key, for example, because I'm sure the Mac doesn't have a Windows key.
Yes, you can make it look exactly like a Windows keyboard, so that when you press what you would expect to be the JAWS cursor, that's exactly what happens.
Okay, right. Okay, we have a caller. Let's bring the caller in and welcome them to Main Menu Live. Hello, caller.
Hello, Jeff.
Hello there.
This is Stan.
Hello, Stan, the man from Oregon.
Oh, no, you're going to start that in. I'm curious because, of course, like you, I'm a WindowWise devotee, but I'm curious. I know a lot of audiophiles that use things like Pro Tools, and I've heard all sorts of the accessibility challenges with that. And I was wondering if you had any experience with that, and what is your take on that?
Okay, great. If you can listen on the air, that would be great.
I sure will.
Okay, thanks, Stan. What do you think about that, Gordon?
Yeah, we're still waiting for Pro Tools to get their act together, basically. They still haven't fully addressed the accessibility issues yet. They still seem to be stuck in the dark ages for some strange reason. I'm not particularly up on Pro Tools because I've never been a user, but I believe it's being worked on. It's just taking sort of forever for them to do anything.
Well, without getting too technical, Gordon, can you describe to us what does it take to actually, if you even know, and I'm not sure if you do or not, but what actually does it take to get an application to be made accessible on the Mac? Do you know what kind of standards or guidelines that need to be followed? In other words, if a user has a vendor and they're listening tonight and they want to get a hold of that vendor and say, are you X compliant? Do you know what they would ask?
Yeah, I'm not an expert when it comes to the programming sort of technologies, but there is a language called COCO,
okay,
which is a sort of implementation of C++, and when you compile, when you use that language, you can enable accessibility features quite easily, I understand. Now, I'm not going to sort of pretend I'm a programmer, because I'm not.
Right.
So it can be done very easily. There's no excuse these days for any author.
So the main thing is
not to do it.
The main thing is, of course, is just to make sure that they're using COCO. Is that basically the keyword?
That is what most modern applications are actually written in. Unfortunately, Parallels, for instance, that uses images to paint the screen, and that's what makes it inaccessible.
Gotcha. Okay. We have another caller. Let's bring the caller in. Hello, caller, and welcome to Main Menu Live.
Hello, guys. John Gunn from Wisconsin.
Hello, John. How you doing?
Hi, John. Well. Gordon, John. Very nice demo, by the way.
Hi, bud. Thanks.
reason I'm calling is Jeff, as you know as well, is being a Mac and Windows user, I would like to make a couple of comments.
Okay.
Regarding the myths, just recently I also bought a, and you're going to understand my point for just a second here. I bought an Olympus recorder, the DS50, and that's, you guys did a great job on that demo, by the way. And in the Windows, to see that drive, you have to, of course, install the software. Well, on the Mac, you plug that puppy in and it mounts it right to the desktop. And you can, you know, see your files, the whole nine yards. And it really works well as a USB mic on the Mac as well. I'm just, you know, almost plug and play. But I guess getting on this recorder, it also comes in a PDF. I found the PDF manual on their website, which, by the way, really works well for Windows. But in the Mac, there's been some discussion using the Mac has kind of a built-in, I guess, PDF viewer, Gordon, if you would probably, you probably would.
Yeah.
And actually, it's a little different, but in most PDFs that I've read on the Mac, using their viewer, and that again, that's their built-in PDF document reader. You can actually, there's a field that you can type in the page, and it goes word for word with the printed manual, and I was very impressed with it. And you know, people talk about the myths, and as you guys heard my iTunes demo, up to this point, up till recently, you know as well as I do that the iTunes was not very accessible, but it has come a long ways. And Gordon, you were kind of talking about various applications before, and I guess I kind of equate that to when screen readers first became available on the Windows side, you know, going back to all the way back to 3.11, you know, the old days. There's a lot of things that weren't accessible, and you know, I guess as the operating system evolved along with the screen reading technology, whatever, that got better. And I think Mac is going to, you know, come a long way on that. It's in my feeling, it's I wouldn't say in the infantile stages, but it has made some strides, but it's got a long way to go.
Let me ask both of you why we have you here, John, Gordon and John. One of the things that I personally have had concern with in reference to Apple has been the seriousness of their commitment to the Macintosh platform. And meaning that, you know, did they release VoiceOver to meet a 508 concern just to say that they now have a screen reader? Do you really think that they are committed to enhancing and evolving the VoiceOver product line? And let's let Gordon answer that first, and then I'll have you answer that, John.
Yeah, I do have an answer to that question. I'm very glad that was raised. Let me just say this. Leopard has been delayed until October because of technical reasons with the iPhone, which Apple are introducing. When Leopard comes around, people will find that accessibility, particularly in applications such as Safari, which is the default web browser, it'll just blow you away. I mean, the things that you can do with Windows, for instance, where you can navigate by tables, controls, you know, radio buttons, buttons, forms, and so on and so forth. Windows uses an application, as you all know, called Microsoft Active Accessibility, which is a virtual buffer, in effect. VoiceOver and Safari don't use a virtual buffer, but come Leopard, navigation will be possible by, you know, any of these elements, tables, buttons, forms, edit boxes, combo boxes, and so on and so forth. So what you see is what you get. So I would dispute anybody's assertion that Apple are not committed to accessibility, because I just don't believe that. Apple have a very, very large team working on accessibility, and come Leopard, then I think you know, we really will be able to shout from the rooftops, hey, come and look at this, you know, this just blows the rest away.
Yeah. Okay, John, your turn.
Well, getting back to expanding on what Gordon said, Apple does have a special team, beta testers for Leopard. Now, no, Jeff, I'm not one of them. And if I was, I'd have to kill you. No, I mean, if you ask me, I'm kidding.
No.
But I think for their commitment to actually have a team interfacing with, you know, Leopard and VoiceOver, I think that says quite a lot.
Yeah.
You know, it's, and I guess that, you know, I bought an iBook a little over a year ago, and, you know, I just, you know, there's, even from the upgrades with Tiger, I think it was like probably 4.4 or something like that. But just meaning that Apple has a team that is in, you know, its own group for the VoiceOver aspect of it, that's pretty impressive. You know, it's kind of like when Microsoft developed Vista. You know, they had GW Micro involved, and they also had Freedom Scientific and so on and so forth. But they're also having the users involved as well, and I think that, you know, that says quite a lot. And from what little I've heard about VoiceOver Leopard, it's going to be a lot more accessible than, you know, than obviously with a Tiger. And as I think, as I mentioned before, having said that, your Tiger was the first, as you know, voice, you know, screen reader for the Apple. But what impressed me on that is you can go and buy an iBook or a laptop, I should say, for, let's say, $1,100, and you got the built-in screen reader.
Yep.
You don't have to spend another $1,000 for a screen reader, so on and so forth. You've got it right. You've got it built right in.
That's right. Okay, John, do you have anything else for us tonight?
No, just keep up the word, Jeff. I was going to get that podcast thing done for you. I will, but there's some things that I'm not really too happy with. I mean, just basically adding the podcast. I was going to do a demo on the iTunes for the podcast.
Right.
Yeah,
no,
I'll still do it if you want.
The store, you mean?
No, no, not the store. No, no, just doing a podcast.
Right.
You know,
more featured podcast on iTunes.
Right. Well, that's kind of generic yet.
Okay. Okay.
So I'm going to probably hold on.
Well, we'll get back with you on that, John.
That sounds good.
Okay,
you guys
then.
Take care. And Gordon, again, you did a nice job on that.
Thanks, John.
Thanks, John.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. 866-400-5333, 866-400-JEFF, if you'd like to call in and ask any questions. Now, Gordon, going back to this issue of commitment, do you think Apple is having much success in evangelizing the community of Macintosh developers to code to Cocoa and develop accessible applications? I mean, this is something that we all know that Microsoft has had a little bit of difficulty addressing within Microsoft, even as well as in the outside community. And caller, we'll get with you in just a minute.
I think Apple is making a lot of progress in encouraging developers to make their applications accessible. And can I just quickly go back to Leopard for a second? I've actually seen a beta of Leopard running on a developer's machine, so I can actually comment on it.
Okay.
First-hand experience, and I've actually briefly used VoiceOver's new web browsing capabilities, and honestly, I mean, WindowWatch is excellent for Windows. You know that, Jeff, and I know it. And, you know, there's no argument with that. But I tell you something, when Leopard comes around, VoiceOver is going to come really, really close to WindowWatch. They really have improved it.
Wow.
And it has Braille support built in as well now for a lot of Braille displays.
Yeah, now I heard that Steve Jobs even announced that at one of the trade shows.
The only issue I have with Apple about that is they will not tell us what hardware they're going to support, which I find a little strange.
Maybe there'll be the iDot. The new iDot.
Sorry?
Braille. Maybe there'll be the new iDot Braille display.
I am not actually familiar with that one.
No. I'm being silly. You know, kind of like the iPod. They'll come out with a Braille display and call it the iDot.
Oh, I see.
Hey, I have an interesting question, Gordon. You know, for a couple of years now, we've had the ability to utilize remote access with JAWS and WindowEyes, you know, with remote desktop and terminal services and Citrix. And now we have some new, relatively new players in that field with Saratek and their RIM and RAM. Is there anything similar on the Mac platform, and is it accessible?
That's a good question. Apple Desktop is something I've been meaning to get around to trying, Apple Remote Desktop. But you have to remember that being based on BSD as it is, Apple Mac OS supports things like SSH natively, which Windows don't. So you can essentially use your machine via a secure shell and do things that way. But yes, I agree. It would be nice to have access to Apple Remote Desktop. And I understand that people are working on that, but I haven't actually tried it myself. So that is one area where I can't really comment.
Gordon, does the Apple Remote Desktop, does that also allow you to connect to Windows Terminal Services? I mean, can you connect with a, you know...
Yes, I believe it does, yeah.
Interesting. Okay.
I believe it does.
Okay, well, let's bring in our caller. We do have a caller. Hello, caller, and welcome to Main Menu Live.
Hi, Don. I like that. This is Beth from Newport News, Virginia.
How you doing?
Good.
Yeah.
How about you guys?
You going to go out and buy your iDot, Beth?
Yeah.
Okay.
Sounds great.
You heard it first here, the new iDot.
That's right. my question concerns, I didn't get to listen to the first half tonight. I'll take a listen to that tomorrow. But in terms of what I have heard before, the voices used for the voiceover screen reader do not exactly impress me in terms of their, I wouldn't want to read a novel with it. They just don't sound very expressive to me. And I was wondering, is that changing? And can the voice called Loquendo be used with Apple? I love that voice. It's very, very expressive. And I was just wondering how do things stand with the voices used? And I will listen online. Thank you very much.
Okay, thanks.
Bye.
All right, Gordon, go right ahead, sir.
Yeah, sure. There are a lot of voices which can be used with VoiceOver, just the same as there are Siri voices for Windows. You're not actually limited to the Apple voices, which I agree, actually, they are pretty poor. The voice I used during that demo is produced by a company called AssistiveWare Technology in conjunction with the Acapella Group. And that's called InfoVox, and they do voices in several different languages, and they are very high quality voices. I was astounded when I first heard the British voice that I used there during that demo, because it really does sound so natural. But to continue to answer the caller's question, in the next version of macOS, which is due out in October, there is a new voice coming around called Alex. Alex actually talks and breathes as a normal human would, and you can actually hear samples of that on the Apple website, www.apple.com/accessibility/voiceover. And if you bring up that website, you'll hear the new Alex voice, and it's a lot better than the robotic things we have now.
Yeah, one of the things that I've noticed is that the Mac voices are sort of difficult to listen to a little bit anyway. So that sounds really good about Alex. Daryl, have we had any questions come in from the MSN Messenger side of things?
No questions, just a couple of comments, but wow, I didn't know Apple was going to support a Braille display and some good positive comments coming in there, but hey, Gordon, I had another question for you. Since I'm not getting any, I thought I would ask them. Do you know anything about whether the Mac is going to support Firefox in as far as accessibility? And also, how about Ajax or the so-called Web 2.0 applications?
Yes, people are working on Firefox for the Mac. There's an application which I've heard of but don't know anything about called ViaFox, which apparently does a lot for accessibility. I'm going to have to look at that because I don't know much about it. But yes, people are working to make Firefox accessible, which is a good thing. And there are people now using it.
And what? How about the Ajax?
Yeah, the Ajax 2.0 stuff, yeah.
I've never tried it, so I can't really comment on that.
Okay. So the browser that's built into the Mac, that's not IE compatible then, right? I mean, you'd have to run IE on the Mac.
IE itself isn't actually accessible on the Mac.
It's not.
Microsoft, for some inexplicable reason, have never made their Macintosh applications accessible. The same is true of Microsoft Messenger for macOS. For some inexplicable reason, it's not accessible, and we are actually pushing them to try and get them to do something about that.
So what do you use for messaging on the Macintosh then?
Right, there is a very good client called Fire, which you can get from SourceForge, and that is quite accessible, and its nice sort of function is that it handles multiple messaging protocols, Yahoo, AOL, Instant Messenger, Microsoft, and so on and so forth, all in the one client.
Okay.
How about a media player? How about listening to ACB radio? I'd imagine that's pretty easy on a Mac, right?
I would assume so.
that is the Mac's strong point.
Right.
You can listen to the ACB radio stream, for instance. You just sort of log onto the website, click on the button marked listen with WinAmpel compatible players, and up pops the stream. But there are external applications as well. There is WinAmp for the Mac, there is MacAmp.
WinAmp for the Mac?
Is it accessible?
Wow. Yes, it is, yeah. Wow, I didn't realize they had it went out for the Mac. Wow, that's...
it's not actually written by the same people.
Okay.
It's what essentially happened was that one of the engineers who used to work for Nullsoft decided he was a little bit disillusioned, so he left and he did his own thing.
So what about performance on the Mac? You know, I mean, obviously, there's sometimes some issues with performance on the Windows side. And obviously, I think if you're running a virtual machine, you're probably going to experience that kind of potential issue on the Mac, too. But do you find that performance or, you know, the feel of the machine is different than say, running on Windows versus running on Mac? You know, more so from a multitasking perspective.
Yeah, it's certainly different. I need to stress that because, I mean, there are a lot of differences in the way that you do things on the Mac. But let me just sort of sum up performance like this. I've had a Mac since August 2005, and in all that time, once, and only once, I've had to shut down the machine and restart because of a crash.
Really? Wow. I think I do that weekly.
I think so, at least.
Yeah, exactly. Wow. So, but do you find that, you know, if a task is running and causing a lot of, you know, CPU and that type of thing, do you find it as sluggish, say, as than a Windows machine might be?
It outperforms anything I've ever seen under Windows.
Really?
You know, even under virtualization, Windows itself. Because of the, I think that the fact that Apple has full control over the hardware platform as well as the software platform, to me that's a plus, because they've written very, very specific drivers for the Apple hardware under Windows, and they work incredibly well. You heard the sound. You know, you heard the sound there. That using one sound device, you can run two screen readers simultaneously, and they will both even speak at the same time, if you want them to.
Oh man!
without interfering with each other, you know, you can play media under Windows. You can play another media file on the Mac at the same time and listen to them both. I don't know why you'd want to, but you could.
Wow! Now that brings up a really interesting question. Of course, it probably doesn't mix those. From a sound recording standpoint, though, right? In other words, if you were to try to record, you know, the equivalent of what you hear on the PC, you probably wouldn't hear both of those because they're virtual, right? They're independent.
Yes, that's right. If you were to record something under Windows, for instance, in SoundForge, and then switch to a Mac window and do something completely different, they wouldn't interfere with each other. SoundForge would just, you know, carry on doing its stuff and record your media file or whatever it is you're working with, and away you go and just, you know, continue writing your latest novel on the Mac.
Here's an intriguing, a potentially intriguing question. Okay, so, you know, a lot of times our Windows PCs get into this weird state, right, where we've lost screen reading access because, you know, there's a blue screen of death or something that's really in kind of an old-style DOS text format on the screen or somehow on the screen in such a way that the screen reader doesn't know anything about it, or the PC doesn't start and there's some kind of an OS boot error. Is VoiceOver at all immune to any of that? Does it make those conditions, those types of conditions, more accessible?
If I could crash my Mac, which I'm not going to, but if I could,
timing on that wasn't good.
So,
hold on, Gordon. We lost you there for a minute. We heard the last thing you said was, "If I could crash my Mac, which I won't," and then Skype sort of went away. So, if you could repeat there on.
Are you getting me now?
I am. Yes.
Right, okay, that's fine. If I was to crash my Mac, which I'm not going to, as soon as I boot the machine, VoiceOver comes up, and whatever sort of comes up on your display is red. If you get an operating system error, which, again, doesn't happen very often, VoiceOver will read it.
Oh, wow.
But now, what if the Windows virtualized window crashes? That doesn't matter, right? In other words, you could go right back into your Mac environment, and you know, the world is a happy place.
If the virtual machine crashes, sometimes, as you know, you need to reset the machine, do a hard reset.
Yeah.
Not a problem. All you do is put Windows, the virtual machine, back into a letterbox mode, press a button on the Mac, which just happens to be Command Option R, and to reset the virtual machine, and it simulates a hard reset.
Cool. All right.
The Mac is everything that you've been running on the Mac is still running, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's great. We have another caller, which I think will be our last caller for the night because we're almost done with the hour here. Hello, caller, and welcome to Main Menu Live.
Hi there, Tina. How are you?
Hello, Tina. How's it going tonight?
It's going great. What a fantastic presentation this evening. I'm just totally, I mean, now I'm just wanting a Mac.
We just have about a minute or two here, so if you can get right to your question, Tina.
Is there, on the Mac, an equivalent of the PC's CMOS setup screens, and are those accessible?
Okay, we'll let him answer that, and you can listen on the air. Okay,
thanks.
Tina, thanks.
I got a bit of flutter there. Can you just repeat the question?
Yeah, she wanted to know, on similar to the PC, you know, there's CMOS settings where you can go in and adjust hardware settings and things like that. She's wanting to know if that's accessible on the Mac or if there's an equivalent of that type of a situation on the Mac.
Yes, you can sort of adjust all that kind of stuff is completely accessible, and you just go into your system preferences or whatever it is for the particular program that you're working with, and you know, just adjust it to your liking. So the answer to the question is yes.
Okay. So is it, but is that actually in a setup window? In other words, before the operating system boots?
When you set up the operating system, you get the option to adjust everything.
Oh, really? So
even the CMOS BIOS, like sometimes if you have a hard drive conflict or something, you know how you need to on a Windows machine.
Well, they probably don't have IRQs on the Mac. I don't know. Do you have IRQs?
Skype's playing up a little bit. Can you just repeat that?
Well, we were just talking about, you know, exactly what does that setup really mean? In other words, can you access, you know, the low-level BIOS settings of the Mac itself?
Oh, I see what you mean. Right. Okay. The Mac doesn't use a BIOS. The Mac uses a system called AGI, which is not EFI, sorry, which is not BIOS-based. The Mac looks at the hardware, sees what's installed, configures itself. There is no BIOS to configure.
Well, then it is accessible. That answers that question. All right. Well, Gordon, we really, really want to thank you for especially getting up in the middle of the night and joining us here on Main Menu Live this week. It's really been a pleasure to hear from you in the first hour as well as hearing you live coming on tonight. And we really, 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 really want to thank you for doing that. If people would like to get a hold of you, if now I didn't ask you this before, so how might they be able to reach you if they might have any questions or any feedback that they might want to give you?
Yeah, sure, no problem. There's an email address, which is gordon@tft, that's tango fox, tango-bbs.co.uk. That's gordon@tft-bbs.co.uk, or the same applies for Microsoft Messenger. You can reach me that way.
Okay, great. Daryl, you have any closing comments for Gordon before we...
I believe that about does it. Thank you so much for coming on, Gordon. I think you have us all wanting to try out a Mac at some point soon.
Yeah.
I would love to see you do that. And obviously, you know, if I can help at all at any time, just ask.
Yeah, well, I never thought I'd end up saying this, but it does sound more and more intriguing, like it could be something that I really do want to look into. Again, Gordon, thank you very, very much for joining us this week here on Main Menu Live. Next week on Main Menu Live, we're going to be hearing from Rick Harmon. Rick Harmon's going to come on to Main Menu in the first hour, and he's going to give us a demonstration of JAWS for Windows 8.0 Public Beta 2 on Windows Vista. He'll show us how it operates on Windows Vista and show you some of the things that he's able to do inside of Windows Vista. And then in the second hour, GW Micro will come on and talk to all of us about the voice sense. We've had a number of people here on Main Menu Live get a hold of us and ask us to do a show all about the voice sense. So Clarence from GW Micro is going to be coming on in the second hour on Main Menu Live to talk to all of you all about the new voice sense. So that's what's coming up. If you'd like to get a hold of the Main Menu production team, get a hold of us at mainmenu@acbradio.org. That's mainmenu@acbradio.org. We'll see all of you next week on the next brand new edition of ACB Radio's Main Menu and Main Menu Live.
If you would like to contact the Main Menu production team or panel of experts heard this evening on Main Menu Live, then simply send an email to mainmenu@acbradio.org. That's mainmenu@acbradio.org. If you have suggestions for topics or you have questions that you would like to have addressed on a future edition of Main Menu Live, then email us and we'll do what we can to answer them or cover your suggested topics on a future Main Menu Live. Thanks for listening, and we hope you'll join us next week on ACB Radio Mainstream for another Main Menu Live.